This is the Go Glow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like sleep, IVF, nutrition, gut health, and much more, as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say that this podcast is sponsored by Emma. Emma mattresses are created by an in-house team of sleep experts who use only the best foams and the latest foam technologies. The Emma products are designed with you in mind and sure to have you waking up feeling energetic and refreshed. For a limited time, listeners of the Good Glow Health podcast can save a massive 42% on orders placed through emma-mattress.ie/podcast. You can find these links in this episode's description. Today, I speak to my friend Dermot Whelan on the Good Glow Health. Dermot is someone who I've always had huge admiration for. He is a super funny guy and is one part of one of the longest standing radio duos, Dermot and Dave, on Today FM. If you've listened to their show, you'll understand exactly why they win so many radio awards year after year. Not only are they brilliant at what they do every day, they're best friends and radiate amazing positive energy. Dermot speaks to me today about meditation and how much it's added to his life. In his early 30s, he felt like he was getting signs to reevaluate. He had a panic attack at the side of the road, and one night, after a few too many, he fell down a flight of stairs in a karaoke bar, all while holding a glass of champagne. That was the night that everything changed, and he hasn't looked back. Today, Dermot speaks to me about how we can address the negative voices in our head, how we can make simple, small changes that could actually change our lives. And he also shows us how we can meditate and do something for ourselves every single day in just 16 seconds. Life is busy right now. 2020 has been really tough on us all, and I think this podcast has come at a really important time. If you want to find out more about Dermot's meditations, you can find him at dermotwhelan.com or on Instagram at DermotTodayFM. I think after listening to this podcast, you'll understand why I love him so much. So I hope you enjoy it. And if you do, please rate and review. Dermot, welcome to the Go Glow Health.
Thank you, Georgie. It's such a pleasure to be here. I feel like I'm on the telly because I've seen this on Instagram. So yeah, I'm chuffed to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. I have to say I'm a little bit nervous because it's usually you interviewing me and you're the expert in this room. So thank you
not
so much
this
for
podcast,
being here.
Not on this podcast. I'm not. I'm very much the guest. So thanks for having me.
I suppose we worked together for years and years and years, and our paths didn't really cross. You were in 98, I was in Spin. But I sort of became aware over the last few years of how much you had started to go down a different path and into meditation and speaking about this new path that you were on. And I was so interested in it. And then when I went through my cancer journey, we kind of met and kind of came together.
Yeah.
A kind of mutual understanding of maybe something that we had both been through or discovered. And I've been in on your radio show a couple of times talking about my cancer, and I always feel like you got what I was talking about, or you were just interested. So I wanted to talk today about your story and how you got on this path.
Well, I suppose it started for me in 2007 for me as a big marker, because I was on my way to a comedy festival, and at the time I was doing stand-up comedy at night in the clubs, and I was doing it about 2 years, and I was also doing breakfast radio on 98FM, so I was working late but getting up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I also had a small baby at home. In fact, I might have had two at that stage, nearly at that stage. I had one and one on the way, and I suppose I wasn't aware at the time, but I wasn't handling all the things I was doing and the stress that it was bringing me very well. So it culminated when I was driving down to the Kilkenny Cat Laughs Festival, which is a it was a big deal for a comedian, where certainly a comedian starting out, because you know the world's best comedians are coming into Kilkenny to perform there, and it's what you always dream of as a stand-up. So I was on my way down, and I remember feeling like the invisible man had opened the door of the car and sat on top of me. Like, if you can imagine, if you ever sat in the car and put your kid on your lap, mm-hmm. Now swap the kid in your mind for like a 12 stone man. That's what it kind of felt like. It was like a pressure on my stomach and then a pressure on my chest. And I thought, God, that's kind of weird. And I thought, God, this is a terrible hangover, because the only stress management system I was really aware of was alcohol. Because when you think about it, when we're kids, the only stress management really demonstrated by a lot of adults around us is alcohol, opening the bottle of wine or going for the pint and that's bass and all those things we heard as when we were kids. So I had been out the night before drinking far too much white wine, I remember, which I never drank, but I had this awful hangover on top of everything else. So I thought, well, God, this is just a hangover then. And then it started to get worse and worse. So I thought, I'm going to have to pull the car in here. So I pulled the car over, got out, and then I was hyperventilating and I was choking, gasping for breath, and I had pains all across my chest. And I thought, I'm having a heart attack or a stroke or whatever's happening, I'm checking out here. And I remember I was lying in the driveway of a bungalow, one of those really Irish bungalows that has the eagles on the pillars.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, this is not how I imagined dying, just beside one of these ostentatious bungalow pillars, you know, 100 yards from a roundabout outside Kilkenny. This is not the Viking, warrior's death I had anticipated for myself. And I even rang my wife, or I had to get, because my brother-in-law was traveling behind me in the car behind me. He saw me pull in, so he came in behind me. And I had to get him to dial my wife on my phone, because what I didn't know is that I was hyperventilating. And when you do that, because of the imbalance of carbon dioxide and oxygen in your system, your muscles can go into spasm. Mm. So my hands had all curled up and my jaw and tongue muscles weren't working either. So he dialed Karina and I rang. And what I was trying to say was like, I love you. You know, you're the love of my life. This is it. Sayonara. And all she heard was like, because I couldn't talk properly.
Oh my gosh.
She's like, are you drunk already? You haven't even arrived at the festival. So eventually we were able to tell her what was wrong. The ambulance came and I got into the back of the ambulance. They gave me a brown paper bag, and within seconds I was right as rain. So they were like, you're not having a stroke. You're not having a heart attack. You're having an anxiety attack. This is a panic attack. Have you had one of these before? And I was like, never. I'd kind of heard of them, but I didn't really know what they were. And I had never had one before. Thankfully, haven't had one since. So they brought me to Kilkenny Hospital and they did a few tests and I was grand and I went on my way. So that was the first major incident that basically was a kick up the backside and said, it was just a really strong message from my body saying, something in your life needs to be addressed. Okay, now is probably the time to do it. So over the next while, I suppose I started to become more aware of just how I was feeling and possibly things that might be stressing me out. I didn't fix everything straight away, that's for sure. I kind of kept an eye on stuff and tried to cut back on my drinking a bit, but I didn't really sort anything major out. And then I had another incident where I was out drinking with an old friend. And I fell down a flight of stairs in a karaoke bar, which is, again, this is not a glamorous thing. And I remember I woke up on the ground in a pool of blood because I had a champagne glass, ever the elegant guy, in one hand as I fell. But I managed to hold on to it all the way down the stairs and I tumbled down, a true Irishman. But unfortunately, when I hit the wall, I jabbed the glass into my forehead.
Oh my,
thankfully, it wasn't my eyeball. So anyway, when I woke up, I did that thing of waking up with a crowd around you. And was just in a bad way, and I needed 20 something stitches on my forehead, and ended up going to hospital. Thankfully, the owner of the restaurant that I fell down, he actually gave me a lift to the hospital, which was very sound.
So, and how old were you around this time?
I was in my, early 30s.
Okay.
Early to mid 30s. Mm-hmm. How was it? Yeah, kind of around 35, around about there. So after that, I remember just sitting in the bathtub, like kind of washing the blood off myself with a black eye and stitches all over my head. And I was like, okay, how many more kicks up the backside do you need before you start to address whatever is happening? Because this time it wasn't a panic attack. This time it was a sort of a gentle push down a flight of stairs. So I really do feel like I was getting stronger and stronger nudges, you know, that I had to address what was going on. And I suppose what was going on was that I was just doing too much. Mm. I was taking on too much. I was I had no stress release other than alcohol. I don't think I was an alcoholic. I just was kind of like an Irish lad going out at the weekends and that kind of stuff. But obviously it wasn't working for me because I was literally injuring myself. Mm. So.
And that next morning or the next day when you were in the bath, like, were you beating yourself up? Did you feel like at a really low point, or were you like, look, this has happened and I'll find a way to fix it?
I was really low.
Yeah.
Because years later, I realized that one of the reasons I was turning to alcohol and one of the reasons I was busying myself to the point of distraction was because my inner voice was so cruel to myself that I gave myself such a hard time. And I think a lot of people find that with alcohol in particular, that with a hangover, it turns the self-critic up to 11, you know, that feeling of, oh my God, why did I do it? I'm a terrible person, you know. And I used to find that alcohol was an incredible amplifier of that negative voice. You know, I used to picture in my head that that inner critic was like a nun, like an angry nun who used to sit on the end of my bed and sort of wait for me to wake up from a night out and go sort of, oh, so you decided to join us then, did you? Like, you know, like every sarcastic teacher you've ever had in your life in a nun's habit. I don't know why it became a nun in my mind, but that's sort of how it was represented, this outside voice that was always directed inwards and that was just picking holes, reminding me that I wasn't doing enough and that I wasn't enough, you know, and that I should be doing more, you know. And I talk about when I'm giving my own talks, I talk about having a terrible dose of the shoulds, which a lot of us suffer from. And I had that in spades, that constant feeling of, you should be doing more. You should be working for this station by now. You should have more money. You should be. And I think for people who can't keep that voice in check, the older you get, the louder it can get, because you keep hitting these supposed milestones. You turn 40. Are you? You turn 50. Are you get married? Or you have children? Or whatever it is, and you're constantly sort of checking yourself off as if there's an invisible scorekeeper who's saying, well, by this age, you should have, you know, X, Y, and Z. You should have your mortgage paid off, or you should have two foreign holidays or a bigger car or a better job or more money in the bank or whatever it is, you know. So I was definitely suffering from a terrible dose of the shoulds, you know, and that can apply to anything. You should be thinner. I should be fatter. I should be stronger. I should go to the gym more. I should go to the gym less. I should see my kids more. I should see my kids less. Like, it's, if that isn't kept in check, that little voice, we end up turning to distraction and we become workaholics, or we become alcoholics, or we, you know, just sit in front of Netflix all day, or we can become aggressive because we're trying to overachieve. You know, a lot of things can happen. So that was definitely something that was going on in my head, which I only really realized a good few years later. So, you know, back when I fell down those steps and I was feeling sorry for myself, I still believed that I could sort of find a way out of the haze, you know, because I, looking back, I don't think I was terribly happy at the time, you know, and I was just sort of filling all my time with stuff, you know. But then I met a lady when I moved to Howth in Dublin, and she's an author, and she was launching her book, and she asked me to MC her launch. So I said I would, but I'd heard that she was a meditation teacher in her spare time. So I said, look, I'll do a swap with you. Well, how about you give me an hour of your time and teach me meditation and get me on that road, and I'll MC your launch. So that's kind of how I got started.
And it's so interesting what you say there about the little voice in your head, because it's almost like it happens to all of us, but we don't tell anybody about that voice. Like I could be sitting on the couch after, you know, a night out, or if I had a bar of chocolate, and that little voice in my head is like, how do you expect not to get cancer again if you're eating chocolate? Or, you know, you went out and you had 4 glasses of wine and you had breast cancer like 3 years ago. Are you for real? And this is happening in my head. And Jamie's sitting beside me, oblivious. But I'd never even dream of telling him that that's the narrative playing in my head. And I think, you know, if you could only hear what's in other people's minds, we'd probably be floored, shocked, can't believe that our loved ones have those thoughts. But I suppose through listening to Oprah, and you know, she would say, you are not your thoughts. Like that little voice in your head is not you. Like, what are your thoughts around that voice in your head, and how do you kind of manage it?
Well, I think one of the reasons why we don't tend to share it with other people is that we're so used to it. It's there. It's like, have you ever lived in a neighborhood with a dog that barks all the time? It just becomes part of the background noise. You know, there's a Jack Russell 3 gardens away that's like, and after a while, you don't even notice him anymore. You know, I think it's the same with that inner voice that's just having a little snipe at us, like a little angry Jack Russell, that we just become used to its company. And I suppose on some level, we just assume everybody has that racket going on in their head. And for a lot of people, they do. I think the first step to dealing with it and beginning to turn down the volume on it, because I don't think we can ever eradicate it. It's part of our protection, you know, our fear and protection mechanism. It's just has been allowed to run riot. So I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it, because I think we do need it to a certain extent. But the first step to turning down the volume on it is becoming aware that it's there, you know, and that word awareness is something that is a little bit of a buzzword. And it comes from areas like mindfulness or meditation or any kind of internal work that you do that makes you start to become aware of the kinds of thoughts that you're having. So our initial reaction is to jump out and fix everything. You know, I want to fix this. I'm going to put this as my to-do list. I'm going to kill that inner critic by the next Friday. You know, we don't have to do that. All you have to do first is start to become aware of it. And we start to become aware of that kind of negative thinking, or any other kind of negative thinking, when we get quiet and we actually put down the remote control and we put down the glass of wine and we put our phone in airplane mode and we find somewhere comfortable and we get quiet. And that's when the little thoughts will become aware and you'll go, wow, there's a Jack Russell 3 gardens away that never shuts the hell up. I never noticed him. You know, he's been there for years. So that's the first step. And it's the most important step. And even just doing that, you'll find the volume will turn down on those kinds of thoughts, because they're screaming to be heard a lot of the time. They're just trying to be heard above the racket. And you're creating the racket by filling yourself with distraction, anything to dampen down the sound of it. But actually, once those thoughts can be heard and come out in the open a bit, they tend to lose a bit of their power and we can get on with our lives.
So interesting. And do you think that when, you know, you started with your meditation and maybe you were opening up to people and telling them how you'd felt over the last couple of years, did you find that they were shocked? Because like for me looking in, you had it all, you know, you were this super funny guy, you know, the best radio show, on the best TV shows. It just all looked so perfect.
Yeah, I suppose everyone looks perfect. We look at our neighbors and they're driving off and they're big Volvo estate or something, and you're like, God, they've got it all, those people. They look so happy and their hair is always beautifully shampooed. Like, I suppose everyone is human, you know, and what we do isn't who we are, you know. And I wasn't miserable. I was just, I suppose, a bit misguided, you know. Mm. So I suppose I wasn't, you know, we hear that word fulfillment a lot. You know, I don't think I was particularly fulfilled, even though if you had asked 16-year-old me, would you like to have, you know, the number one radio show in Dublin? Would you like to have a, you know, a hit comedy TV show? Would you like to be telling jokes, you know, in big theatres? I would have taken your hand off, you know. So even though I was ticking a lot of career boxes and sort of personal goals, because I wasn't able to get a proper perspective on all the things that I was doing and protect myself against overdoing, mm-hmm. or even question the reasons why I was doing all of this stuff, I don't think I was reaching any deep level of fulfillment with it all, you know. But that's something that really struck me when I started teaching meditation, because I was using my humor to deliver a message that was actually quite important to me, rather than just kind of fluffy gags or gags for the sake of it. It changed my whole perspective. I remember about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I did a show in the Three Arena, and I was on the bill with Dave, and it was a bunch of comedians on the bill for a charity night. And, you know, doing comedy on stage in the Three Arena is like, that's the dream, you know. So we did that and I enjoyed it. It was fun, you know. And I came off the stage and I was saying to Dave, yeah, that was a bit of crack. That was like a good practice for our tour anyway. And he was kind of looking at me going, dude, we just did the Three Arena. You should be high-fiving each other all the way home to Port Marnock or whatever. And the next day I did a lunchtime teaching slot in Irish Life, I remember, in town on Tara Street. And I just taught meditation to 30 people in a room. You know, the night before the Three Arena, there was 10,000 people in there. And after that 30 people, I came out of there walking on air. I would have high-fived anyone who came near me. Like, it was so fulfilling, mm-hmm. you know, because I was still using all my, you know, my communication skills and my humor skills and those things. But now I was talking about something that actually really meant something to me, you know, and that I knew even if one person in the room, one out of the 30, picked up something that would they could use and would make them feel better, then that made me feel really fulfilled, you know? Mm. And I remember thinking, like, this is crazy. You know, you could have 10,000 people listening to you one night, 30 the next, and you pick the 30 because it actually means something. So I think that word fulfillment, again, is one of those words that we, you know, we hear people mention, but we're never quite sure what it means. You know, is happiness fulfillment? Fulfillment just has a, I think, a bit more depth to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's joy versus happiness. You know, it's there's a bit more going on there. And I suppose we get fulfillment from different things, having children and getting married and those kinds of things. But when we can't find any level of real fulfillment in our work and something that we spend a lot of our lives doing, you know, we spend most of our time working, you know, then you can have large gaps in time where maybe you're like, nah. Like, I remember sitting in a bar, I was in Cork 3 years ago, and I remember I was watching the Masters at the golf on telly in the pub beside the hotel I was staying in. We were doing an outdoor broadcast show the next morning. So I was just killing a few hours watching the golf. And a guy came up and sat beside me. We got chatting and turned out he was an architect and he owned his own business. Was doing everything he wanted. He was telling me he had, you know, beautiful wife, lovely kids. Everything was going. That day he was out having a pint because he'd landed a massive building contract, you know, and this for his architectural company. This was the big time. So he was delighted with himself on the surface. But as we got talking and I told him I did meditation and I was a teacher, he started to open up a little bit, as people tend to do when you tell them that. And he said something that always stuck with me. And he said, you know, he told me all the things that he had going on and the contract and the family and the lovely kids and all that. And then he said, you know, I'm happy, but I'm not happy. And I knew exactly what he meant, because it's that, it's, you can have the things, you can hit the milestones, you can tick the boxes that this invisible scorekeeper keeps telling you that you should have by X date and all that. But you can achieve all those goals that seem important to you, but you can still be missing that feeling of fulfillment. Mm. You can still feel like you're chasing your tail, or you're like that staircase in The Simpsons that always stuck with me, the staircase to nowhere. Do you remember? I think it might have been in Shelbyville, was it? But you see people going up on an escalator really excited and then they just fall off the top. And sometimes we can feel like that. When he said, I'm happy, but I'm not happy. Mm. It really resonated, because a lot of us, you know, most people won't have a panic attack like I had. They won't go tumbling down a flight of stairs in a karaoke club and wake up to the song It's Raining Men being sung by a group of women. And it literally was raining men. I was it. Some people won't have these big milestones or events in their lives that sort of shake them up or, you know, set them on this sort of Hollywood path to redemption. Most people are just doing their best. They're mostly doing what they want. They're mostly spending time with people that they like, but they're just happy, but not happy, you know? And I think a lot of that can come from losing touch with ourselves, as self-help book as that sounds. But when we start going down a road where we're obsessed with doing things that we feel we should be doing, as opposed to that we truly want to be doing or need to be doing, then we can end up sort of separating from ourselves, you know. And when we're kids, we have a great sense of self. I have a 9-year-old girl called Rosie, who I'm mildly terrified of, because she is so independent, so outspoken, does not do stuff that she doesn't want to do, you know, and logically argues against things you're trying to tell her to do. But for her, you know, she has not lost touch with herself at age 9. She is right in her center, you know. And when you meet people who are like that, sometimes it can be quite intimidating because they have this power about them. So when we're kids, I think we naturally do a lot of the things that I'm trying to teach people to relearn at the moment. And that's spending time with ourselves, taking time away from other people. If you watch your kids, our small children, they'll naturally just get up, walk away, shut their bedroom door, and then you hear as they're playing away in these beautifully mindful moments. You know, they're stepping out of the noise for a while. You know, they know when they want company and when they don't want company. And we lose a lot of those boundaries and we just get stuck into everything, you know. And, you know, I'm not trying to criticize everybody or me or humans, but that's just the human condition, you know. So, you know, being okay with yourself, little things like that, you know, kids are generally very okay with themselves. They don't have a lot of filters on when they look at other people. They're far less judgmental. All these things that we had as kids, we can relearn, you know, and those things, when we really find a bit of quiet, when we find a bit of stillness, we can start to let answers come to questions that we can just plant in there, like, who am I? You know, who am I beneath all the masks that we wear, like parents, friends, mothers, fathers, employees, bosses? When you strip all that away, who am I? Who am I in there? And we're not going to hear what we're trying to tell ourselves when there's so much noise.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. But first, I wanted to tell you a little more about Emma. Made right here in Ireland, the Emma mattress comes with a 10-year guarantee and is delivered for free and straight to your front door. If you're not 100% convinced, you can return it hassle-free for a full refund. Try Europe's most awarded mattress now for 200 risk-free nights and discover the secret to a great night's sleep. The Emma mattress consists of 3 high-quality foams that perfectly adapt to your body to offer you the right amount of support, pressure relief and comfort, while the breathable materials help keep you cool even during the warmest nights. Just the thing you need to wake up feeling energetic and refreshed. Now, back to the conversation.
I think when before I got sick, and what I noticed about my life before cancer, is that all I did was run around like a headless chicken. from A to B, late, couldn't find anything, doing everything for everyone else all the time. And then when I'd eventually get home, I just had like nothing left in the tank for me. Mm-hmm. And then when I got sick and they said, you have to go into treatment for a year, and all of a sudden I had all of this time, which is so precious, I started to do things for myself, and investing in myself in that year like changed my life. And I think with meditation, that's investing in yourself for a couple of minutes a day, isn't it?
It is. And even when I, you know, face, if it's a room of people, you can always tell there's going to be some people there who this is just not going to go in, you know, and for them getting over the threshold of the door was the thing.
Mm.
They've come in, they sat down, and you can see that they're fidgety, they're not comfortable just sitting with themselves at all, you know. But, you know, I always tell people, if they're a bit cynical or a bit suspicious or unsure or uncertain about engaging with this kind of thing, that you, at the very least, you're going to take some time for yourself, and it's going to be quiet and calm. You know, whether you find any sense of peace or you're into it at all or excited by the prospect of doing it again, it doesn't matter. Even if you try this once and you get 5 minutes of peace and quiet for yourself, then that's a result, mm. you know. But it's a lot of it is just normalizing, as you say, time out for ourselves, you know, because we do chase our tails. And particularly when you become a parent, you know, all your priorities get flipped upside down, and now you are doing stuff for other people, you know.
I thought it was really interesting what you said. I think it was on Dara Quilty's podcast. You said that, you know, sitting on the train, that you would meditate for 30 minutes instead of scrolling for 30 minutes. And I think I certainly feel at the moment with COVID and Twitter and judgment, everyone's angry, we're looking to blame someone, that I can look on Twitter for 5 minutes and I come away and my heart's beating faster. I feel really negative about the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. I feel in a tailspin. But instead of scrolling, maybe just to take a minute for yourself, and instead of, you know, looking outwards, look inwards in a way.
Yeah, I mean, on a physiological level, you know, there's lots going on when we sit down to do some breathing, do a little breathing exercise or something, or call it meditation, call it breathing exercises, call it, you know, the cops in the States call it tactical breathing. You know, when they learn, maybe they could do with a little bit more. But, you know, when we look at what's happening when we take the time out, that's something that I really like to focus on.
Yeah.
Because it's disengaging the stress response. And just as you said, when you pick up your phone and you're scrolling, you're listening to the news, you're looking at Twitter, and it's particularly loud at the moment, as you say, people are pointing loads of fingers and calling for people's heads and all those kinds of things. When we are engaged in that kind of behavior without properly planned things to interrupt it, our stress response can be on full alert the entire day, and we mightn't even be that aware of it. So imagine it like it's your house alarm, or a smoke alarm if you have one in your house, or maybe you have a dog that barks if someone comes to the front door. They're really useful things because we need them in when there's a potential threat. You know, if you're asleep and there's a bit of smoke, you want the smoke alarm going off. The problem arises when those things are going off all the time. When our emergency response is never switching off, that's when it starts to wear us down and get us feeling overwhelmed or burnt out or stressed out or sitting on the edge of your bed with your head in your hands. I remember I was like that at one point because I was just so flattened from everything because I wasn't putting in pattern interrupts, as my teacher used to call them, things to switch off that stress response. Imagine it's, you know, there's a red handle for the alarm on the wall and you just pull it down and you turn it off. And that's what meditation is for me. It's knowing when to step in and turn off our natural stress response, because stress has got a very bad reputation over the last couple of decades. The minute you hear the word stress, you think, oh my God, that's it, I'm going to get sick and die, and oh my God. You know, stress can be really effective and helpful for us. If you think of doing a driving test, you know, that's a stressful experience. you know, you feel anxious, your heart's racing, your breathing is a bit shallower, your blood pressure's up a little bit, but you get into the car and you do the test and then it's over. And maybe you pass, maybe you didn't, but whatever happens, you're going to feel more resilient after. You'll feel happy that you managed to go through with that, or a job interview, or a bit of public speaking. Those bits of, you know, short-term stress can be very beneficial for us, you know. It can, you know, sometimes if you look at the two examples I like to pick are Homer Simpson and Katie Taylor. You know, if you take that classic image of Homer Simpson, he's got his arms around Bart's throat and yeah. he's choking Bart. And then you see one of those iconic pictures of Katie Taylor and she's throwing a left hook. You know, at those moments in time, they're both experiencing the same thing. They're both, their bodies and minds are experiencing the stress response. Their amygdala in their brain is fired up. This is the part of our brain that looks after angry thoughts and fearful thoughts and anxious thoughts. And we need that part of our brain because it stops us from sticking our hand in a dog, you know, in the animal cage at Dublin Zoo, or walking out in front of a bus. But so when that's fired up, lots of things are happening. Our blood pressure is up, our heart rate's up, our breathing is shallow, our blood is moving to our extremities to either help us to fight or flee. Fight or flight, you hear it's called. And what we do with that stress is up to us, and it's up to our perception of stress. So if you take Homer Simpson, he's experiencing the stress response, but his natural reaction is to lash out. Really emotional, really reactive. I'm going to choke Bart. I'm going to be attack the people who love me around me. You have Katie Taylor experiencing the same thing. She's the opposite. She's using the extra stress hormones in her system to help her to move quicker, think faster. There's more oxygen in her brain, which is making her more alert, which means she can perform better. And even though someone is literally punching her in the head, she can still think clearly and positively and is planning her next move, making better decisions. So there's two very different experiences of the stress mm-hmm. response, and how much time we spend in that stress response and what we do when we're in it can change the way we feel about our day and about our lives. You know, so when I talk about turning off that stress response, you know, when we can't turn off that stress, even if Katie Taylor spent, you know, for the length of a fight, she can probably keep that up. If she was stressed out like that for the entire length of the day or a week, she'd be a wreck. Because when we don't turn off our stress response, we basically, it becomes like that smoke alarm that's going off, and we reverse all the benefits of that stress can offer us in a short burst. Do you get me?
Yeah.
So what we try and do with meditation is we try and introduce things that are just going to turn off that internal alarm. And when we do that, we give our bodies and our minds a chance to repair and to breathe and to come up for air. You know, I do a 16-second meditation, as I teach people that. Within that 16 seconds, your heart rate is lowered, your blood pressure is lowered, your stress hormones are reduced, your immune system is boosted, your growth and your sex hormones increase. The blood comes back to your digestive organs so you can start digesting the nutrients from your food. All these things are things that your body needs to just operate on a plain level so that it can do the things internally that it needs to do and keep our brains and our minds and our bodies healthy. It's like if you have a car and you're driving it, just keep revving the hell out of it, and you're driving like in first gear. Do you ever see the old grannies? Yeah. Sometimes they can't seem to change out of first gear. And maybe ageist and sexist. I'm sure there's lots of men that do it as well. But, you know, you can't just keep revving your car to death. And that's what we do to ourselves sometimes. So unless we change gears, unless we take some time out for ourselves, unless we learn a few techniques just to turn off that internal alarm, we're going to stay in that stress mode, and that just wears us out. So you get feelings like anxiety and depression and overwhelm and poor sleep and feelings of isolation, lack of confidence, lack of creativity. You know, all those things can just build up on us, you know. And usually then when we feel those things rising, we reach for things outside us that are going to try and fix it, like a bottle of wine or loads of sugar or, you know, chocolate or whatever it is. but it doesn't work long term. So having a few techniques that you can use in your toolbox that you can reach for can just turn off that internal alarm, and that's where we start to feel a little bit more ourselves.
When I was in chemo and I'd meditate in our garden in nature, like I find it really healing. Mm-hmm. I'd think about like my life before and how I would have rather have put on a wash, you know, before I had cancer, or iron a couple of shirts if I had 10 minutes, or, you know, whatever, my never ending to-do list in the house. But actually just sitting there for 10 minutes gave so much more to me than a clean house ever would, or an organized fridge, you know. And I think especially as women, a lot of us, we're trying to do everything. We're trying to be the best mom, you know, have the best lunch boxes now, and are our kids happy, and you're just trying to do everything else for everyone. But just 10 minutes can make such a difference. And I think some people are afraid of committing to meditation because they're like, oh, I don't have an extra half an hour every day, are you mad? But it's not necessarily sit down, everything has to stop, you know, for half an hour. You can do it for minutes at a time.
Yeah, and like I said, I teach a 16-second meditation, you know.
Will you do that for us?
I will, of course, yeah. People will say, well, I don't have time to meditate. I mean, I've got too many bloody things to do. Kids' lunches, yeah, what am I going to do? Sit in a lotus position, you know, while they go off to school? You go, well, do you have 16 seconds? You go, okay, yeah. Why not start there, you know? Mm. And it's about building it into your morning routine. It's about normalizing like your 10 minutes that you spoke about, instead of putting on the wash or the dishwasher or whatever it is. My wife is laughing now, saying he never puts anything in the dishwasher. Yeah, if you can build it into your morning routine.
The 16 seconds or
that
just start.
A guided meditation, right, or yeah. 5 minutes of something else. Like it can be anything you want, but let's start with the 16 seconds.
Okay, Cassie, do you want to do it? Okay.
Okay. Great. So get nice and comfortable.
Okay.
So wherever you're sitting or lying down, or if you're driving, maybe hold off and do it when you get back, when you're not moving at high speed or operating heavy machinery. So nice and comfortable wherever you are. And then keeping your eyes open just to begin with, we're going to take two nice, long, slow, deep breaths in. Okay. And we're going to breathe in through our nose because that pulls the air deeper down into our lungs. And a nice way to check if you're breathing in a more beneficial way is put one hand on your belly. And you can put the other hand on your chest. So we're going to just breathe in through our nose. Nice, long, slow, deep breath in. And I want you to feel the belly rise underneath your hand. So imagine you're breathing down into your belly. So the hand on your chest stays still. And then you're breathing in through your nose. And feel that belly rise underneath your hand. So just try that a few times. Sometimes you might feel a bit strange because we're so used to breathing into our chest. We're kind of... So if you can try and pull that air down in through your nose, follow the air down and feel your belly expand underneath your hand, rise. And then when you let that breath go, you're letting the belly fall back down again. So let's just try that a few times. In through the nose, down into the belly, hold the breath in the belly for a moment. And then gently let that go. So that's belly breathing. That in itself is a really nice exercise. It's really nice to teach kids at nighttime if they're a little bit anxious going to bed. They can really get in touch with it. So just putting your hand on your belly. In through the nose, feel your belly rising. And then gently let that go. So now we're starting to get nice and relaxed. So if it's more comfortable, you can put your hands down again. We're going to do our 16 seconds. So if you haven't closed your eyes, you can close them now. Just going to take a nice, long, slow, deep breath in now again. In through the nose. Into the belly. And gently let that go. Really good. So the idea with the 16 seconds is we're going to breathe into a count of four. We're going to hold it in our bellies to a count of four. Then we're going to let the breath go back out to a count of four. And then we're going to hold that breath out for another count of four. So when you're ready, I'm going to take a nice, long, slow, deep breath in. I'll count for you. In we go through the nose. Two, three, four. Now hold that breath in your belly. Really good. Three, four. And gently let that breath go back out. Watching it go out of your belly. Three, four. And now hold that breath out to another count of four. Two, three, four. And now just breathe normally. Really good. So that's 16 seconds. Meditation. And when you're feeling like you're ready to come back, you can just gently open your eyes.
It's so calming.
Yes, and it's so easy. You know, that was one that kind of, that was my gateway meditation when I got into it, because you can, it's just so simple. You can use it anywhere. You can do it while you're driving. If you keep your eyes open, you can, we're queuing for everything at the moment, so you can do it in queues. You can do it on the train. You can do it when you get into bed. You can do it if you wake up in the middle of the night and you want to go back to sleep. Sometimes it's known as box breathing or square breathing. And it's just a nifty little technique that you can use anytime, anywhere.
And would you use that if you were going into a stressful situation or something you were anxious about?
Yeah, I use it all the time. I was giving a Zoom talk yesterday and I did a few 16-second little meditations while I was waiting for them to kind of log on and the talk to begin, because I might have a few little butterflies and you're hoping things go well. When I'm on a comedy tour, I use it every single night before I go on stage.
And see, that's the thing. People will say, oh, I don't have time to meditate. Like, they don't even want to entertain the idea because you don't want to fail at something or take something up and not continue with it. But to know that you can do something for 16 seconds and feel like, I feel better after that. You feel nourished after it.
Yeah. Well, because you are, you know, you're breathing a bit deeper and slower. There's a fantastic book out at the moment called Breath by James Nestor. And it just looks at all the traditions of breathing and all the science behind nasal breathing and how good it is to breathe through your nose as opposed to your mouth, because your nose is this wonderful natural air filter that we tend not to use a lot of the time because we've become mouth breathers. So you're getting a bit of nice, deep nasal breathing. It's pulling oxygen down to the bottom of your lungs where all those lovely receptors are to take that oxygen into your bloodstream. That all goes to your brain. Helps you think a bit clearer, helps you think a bit quicker, may not feel a bit as sluggish. And you're also triggering, you're sending messages to your nervous system that it's okay to relax, you know. We have something called the sympathetic nervous system, which is fired up when we feel like we're under threat, even though sympathetic sounds like it should be really nice, but it is trying to protect us. But your sympathetic nervous system is triggered when you feel there's a perceived threat. We go into fight or flight mode between 8 and 15 times every single day. In the olden days, it might have been because we were being attacked by an animal or some lad with a sword. Now it's if we get an email we didn't want to get, if you know, someone cuts us off in traffic, or we know we have a conversation with someone that's going to be challenging. All these things can send us into that fight or flight mode. So by using that 16-second method, or even just simply the belly breathing we did before it, you are interrupting that stress response that was activated. And we're always going to have stress in our lives. It's not going anywhere, you know. And to try and hide away from it or live in a cave or live in denial that there's any stress, it's not going to work for us. We might as well make friends with stress. Remember, short bursts of stress can actually help us. You know, they've done tests on rats where they stress them out. I'm not entirely sure how you stress out a rat, you know. I don't know, tell him his mortgage is going up or something. But they recognize that short-term stress in the rats actually created cells in the rat's brain, in their brains, that help them with cognitive function. So it actually helps us to think better and clearly, but we need to be able to turn it off. So those two little tricks, the belly breathing and the 16 seconds, are excellent little ways. If you put a reminder in your phone or wrote on your hand or something to do that a few times a day, that'd be a massive help, you know.
You've probably already answered this question when you spoke about fulfillment, but what has it brought to your life?
Yeah, I suppose it has, in terms of why I do what I do, in terms of being a comedian, it added in another level of meaning, as I mentioned, that it kind of, let me put it this way. Certainly the big incidents that I had in terms of the anxiety attack and the trip down the stairs with the champagne glass. When you start to take a little bit of time out after events like that, or just if you start to give yourself some quiet time, it will allow you, without any pressure, to start looking at why you do the things you do. And I think I was just, a lot of us, we start to act in certain ways, maybe when we're small kids, maybe when we're teenagers, and we just kind of go on that trajectory without ever questioning it. You know, my teacher always called it the winning formula, that we discover these winning formulas. So, for instance, I was small and bullied a little bit when I was sort of around age 11 to 14, that kind of age. So I learned in school very quickly that if I was funny, that would get me out of some scrapes, you know, and may earn the respect of people that normally I wouldn't get to be friends with. So I started on that trajectory of funny is my, you know, it's my social lubricant, you know, and my shield to some extent. And I realized that I had just sort of gone on that trajectory, and this is without ever questioning it. I would just try and tell jokes and be funny and entertain and jump up and down. But it was only when I took the time out to actually ask myself, well, why do I feel the urge to keep jumping on the radio in front of a mic? You know, is it because I'm weak and I just need attention? Or is it because my winning formula was that was my survival mechanism and that's what worked for me? So once I kind of appreciated why I had started to do the things that I did, I could then start to focus on, well, did I still enjoy them in my 30s and 40s? Am I still enjoying those kinds of things? Or can I actually tweak them because I don't have to maybe do them all as intensely as maybe I did? Maybe I want to shift my focus to teaching. Maybe I could use my humor to deliver some other message. So I'm still in the same game I always was. I've just added in another element and turned the volume down on other elements. And now I feel like there's a bit more balance and a bit more fulfillment. And sometimes we feel like we have to blow up our lives. We go, that's it. I'm not happy. I'm leaving my husband. I'm going to an ashram in India. That's it. You know, I'm pulling the plug on everything. Sometimes we don't have to do that. Sometimes a small little change or a tweak can actually bring us a lot of the fulfillment that we're looking for. I leave you on a great story about how a small thing can change, make a big change in someone's life. A guy called Declan got into contact with me and he said, I was in a really bad place at the start of lockdown. My job had gone. I was worried about money. I wasn't myself. I was snapping at my wife. I was snapping at the kids. They're the most important things in my life. And I kind of have an out of body experience when I can see myself being snarky and giving out, but I can't seem to stop. The stress was just getting the better of me. And he said, I tried your 16-second meditation and thought, I've nothing to lose. I might as well give it a go. And for him, the amazing change in his life was, I'm singing in the shower again, he said. And I was like, wow, what was that about? And he said, the way I knew I wasn't myself and I wasn't happy and I wasn't feeling fulfilled was that I had stopped singing in the shower. So for him, that was a small marker. That was a marker that everything was reasonably in place. And if he got up in the morning and he sang in the shower, then he was himself. But he noticed, oh my God, I've stopped singing in the shower. That for him, that was a big deal. He started doing the 16-second meditation. And within 2 weeks, he said he was singing in the shower again. And that's not to say, hey, try my online course. I'm saying it to reassure people that you can feel like everything is crumbling and everything is falling apart. But sometimes it's a really small tweak that can make a huge improvement. And suddenly you're singing in the shower again. Wow. So whatever you're singing in the shower is, you can be doing it again. You don't have to reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have to go off to India or, you know, live in a Buddhist retreat in the Himalayas. You could just take 16 seconds for yourself.
Oh my God, amazing. I feel so privileged to have sat across from you and heard all of your amazing words in this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
You're an incredible person. Thank you for all the support that you've shown me over the last couple of years. And I'm so excited to see what's next for you.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited about this podcast as well that you're doing. And like, you know, I see on Instagram the power of the even the small things that you're doing, you know, it's a massive ripple that goes out there. And I'm very proud to be a little part in your ripple.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to The Good Glow Health with thanks to Emma. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It would really mean the world. And if you'd like to send me a message about any topics you'd like me to cover, please do so on Instagram at georgie.crawford. Talk to you very soon.